Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. The Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. This is one of those weird years, Adam, where two consecutive episodes line up on like days when nobody is looking for a podcast to listen to.
Oh, yeah.
Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve.
I'm looking forward to a statistical nightmare coming up.
Yeah, this is by dint of how the dates lined up, just lose our entire audience.
I don't want people to get used to being without us. That's no good.
No. Hopefully everybody needed to spend 15 minutes away from their families and used us to do that.
Ben, I'll tell you how much people like us. People like us so much that they've been sending us things.
Oh, yeah?
Stack of letters and packages here.
Wow.
It's been a while since we've done a mail call, Ben. What do you think about that?
I would love to go through the mail with you.
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
Ben, I'm going to start with these cards. I come from a cards first family. What about you? When you get a gift, you got to open that card first, right?
There's definitely a math you do and a gift-giving scenario, like a Hanukkah or a Christmas morning, where you know that there's probably like one really good one in the pile somewhere, and you don't want that to be first. So, and you have to kind of like read people's poker faces to see whether you're doing it wrong.
Right.
So putting the cards all up top is a great way to, you know, build some safety into your gift opening process.
Ben, I should say off the top, there is a larger than normal frequency of letters/packages that are coming to us from the Australia, New Zealand part of the world.
Wow, maybe a ship just put in and all of these letters were on it.
This first letter is such a letter. It's from Amy Brake. It is a Christmas card with a passed out Santa on the cover. Letter goes, Dear Ben and Adam, wishing you a very Aussie Christmas. Thank you for all of the laughs and for creating a community of people who have given me much joy.
Oh.
F-O-D, Amy Brake. Thanks, Amy.
Oh, man. Enjoy your Christmas barbecues and beach trips.
That sounds nice, right? You get to do that being in L.A.?
No, but I mean, they're like on the other side of the equator, so it's properly summer for them. L.A. has like basically the same weather all the time, but in the winter, it's a little bit cool in the morning.
That's amazing.
Our next letter comes from Sarah and James. Oh, Ben, this is a save the date.
Oh, wow. Oh, I got this. I got one of these.
Yeah. Hey, guys, remember us? We're the couple who proposed and accepted as P1 messages on Greatest Gen DS9. Bet you thought we were all bluster when we invited you guys to the wedding via email and said that Ben should officiate. Well, guess what, bitches? We're for real.
I don't know why just I would officiate.
I think that's the rule, Ben. They want you to officiate, and I'm very comfortable with that.
What are you, the DJ at the party afterwards?
No, I'm an attendee. I'm going to be enjoying a dinner and a drink.
I think they were at, I want to say, our L.A. show and gave me a save the date as well.
Pretty cool.
Real sweet couple.
Yeah, very nice. Let me know how you RSVP. I'll make sure I do the same.
Okay.
All right, got a letter from Grapevine, Texas. Grapevine, Texas, hello. We've got Ben for the full hour. Here's a Peace on Earth holiday card with a doggo on the front.
I do like a nice dog holiday card.
Got a couple of messages here from one from Dan, one from Brian. Dan says, thank you both for another year of awesome pods and for a phenomenal live show.
Oh.
Hope you all can make it back to DFW in 2019. And then Brian follows up with, you guys are awesome beyond words. Not only do you make me laugh inappropriately at work, but I've also made a legion of friends through your viewers. Thank you for your penetrating pod that explores the deepest of space buttholes. That from Brian. Thanks, Brian and Dan.
Thanks. That was a really fun show in Texas, and I hope we get to go back someday.
Yeah, you and me both. We're moving up in size, Ben. Those are card-sized envelopes. What we have here, it's maybe a 24 by 12 by 6 size box.
Oh, that's a big one.
It's from our friend Brittany in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You know, I could have pre-opened these before the show to save time.
No, more fun this way.
That's not what I do. Oh, Ben, there's two boxes. They're like, there's one for you and one for me. And
oh, cool.
Brittany prescribes to the thing that my wife does about presents, which is like, if you don't put ribbon and a bow on it, your wrapping job is incomplete. One card, two boxes. I've opened the card, and it is a Quark the Herald Angel Sing Christmas card. It's made by Heather Bachman, like this card is, and it's great. Message goes like this: Ben and Adam, 'tis the season for delicious treats and tasty eats. The greatest exo cook would like to wish you both happy holidays. For bringing such joy to our lives, we would like to present you with your very own Exo Cook aprons, Wesley scarves, handmade by Brittany R., and straws.
Wow.
To whomever receives this, you have permission to open both packages. Oh, hey, that's me, Ben. Hey. I'm opening the Adam package first. And as described, we have a greatest Exo Cook apron. It is red. It has been screen printed with the Exo Comp. And a frying pan with an egg in that frying pan. The ExoComp also wearing a chef's hat.
I love this. This is a subculture of Friends of DeSoto who are into cooking and formed a group around that. I might get a Facebook account just so I can join that group.
Oh, no. There's no going back then.
Yeah, I can't go back.
The Wesley Crusher scarf is really beautiful.
What are we talking about? Is it knit?
It is knit. It's handmade by Brittany R.
Yeah.
Wow. So beautiful. And last but not least, there is a crazy straw in here that is customized to say, oh no. in the style of yours truly. It is awesome.
Wow.
All right, I'm opening Ben's package. Oh, your straw is about 2 feet long. And it says, fuck you, Adam. Because it's in cursive, it's a little hard to make out, but yeah, that's what it says. It kind of looks like a great straw for drinking a fucked up margarita, Ben.
I really want to. I want to do that in front of you while giving you double finger birds.
All right, I need to send you a picture of this. It's pretty great. I'm going to Jackie and Lori you the straw.
Oh, man.
To the greatest Exo Cooks, thank you very much for such thoughtful gifts. Sometimes you get a handmade gift and you're like, oh, boy. This is going to be a good thought. But these are great handmade gifts.
I feel like there's going to be an entire drink worth of drink in that straw by the time it gets to my mouth.
Yeah. You're going to have to maintain suction, Ben. I don't know how.
I could suck a golf ball through a garden hose, Adam.
Ben, our final two packages are in poster tubes. They are large poster tubes, and let me tell you something. They
wow.
each weigh like 20 pounds.
No
so
kidding.
I do not believe there are posters inside.
What's it going to be? Are they from the same sender?
This came from New Zealand. Dunedin.
Dunedin.
New Zealand. Both of them did.
Whoa.
So this must have cost $11,000 to ship here.
You should have just given us the money.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? We would have done a show in New Zealand for that.
We'd come to you.
They did a thing where they taped a card to the tube itself. So right now I'm X-Acto knifing that card from its tape. Letter goes like this. Dear Ben and Adam, work troubles, daily traffic, new baby woes, late nights in the car, Trump. You've been there through all of it, and I'm so grateful. I'm similarly grateful for my amazing adoptive country. Being an expat rules, he puts in parentheses. This is why you're both receiving six matching 330 milliliter cans of the best that this place has to offer.
Wow.
As an enticement to come visit us and to bring your show here to New Zealand. And do yourself a favor and make sure to visit the South Island. Oh, he gave me a pronunciation key. It's pronounced Dunedin. Ben, Dunedin is definitely where it's at. Much love, and thanks for helping make our 2017 convention in Hobbiton a huge success. This is from Paul.
Oh!
I remember this.
Yeah, was there not a Priority One message about it?
There was. I remember reading it.
Yeah.
Hey, that's great.
Oh, cool.
So what Paul sent us are two bazooka tubes full of the best beer that New Zealand has to offer.
That's great.
And I think we've got to go to Dunedin.
Yeah.
Don't we?
The gauntlet has been thrown. We need to pick it up.
We can be bribed. This is a great way to do it. Thanks to one and all for sending us some nice packages to brighten our day. That's really generous and cool of you guys.
Yeah, seriously, thank you.
Ben, one place that isn't so bright is the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, what do you say we pursue this episode? It's episode 19 of season 3, Through the Looking Glass.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
Ben, I had such high hopes for this episode. I think much like what's the sobriety center that you go to that what they do to get you sober is they give you all the booze you can possibly handle to make you sick off of it.
Oh God.
There's one of those places in Seattle.
Jesus.
And I feel like my love for the Mirror Universe has been done like that by Through the Looking Glass. Like, I got all I could handle and now I have no taste for it anymore.
You're sick of it.
Yeah. It starts on a fun note. I mean, it's a bullfighting McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
In Sisko's office. And
last episode, Quark was committing a felony and trying to procure biomimetic gel. This episode, he's been caught doing animal cruelty with Morin as his accomplice.
When Ferengi is your look, like, there is no bad look for Quark, right? It's just all the same.
Every one of these that goes by, I wonder how they ever imagined he would be a sympathetic character after that point.
It works a lot like Shatner works with Kirk. I think Armin Shimerman is so great and so charismatic that, like, you kind of have to love him. He's like the baby from Dinosaurs, right? The punishment for vole fighting is the confiscation and removal of the voles. Ben, my question for you is, they're euthanizing those voles, right? Like, they're just shooting them out of an airlock.
Yeah, he says, get them off the station.
Yeah.
Which,
I think we know what that means.
Yeah. I mean,
voles, back on the menu, boys.
I mean, I guess this makes sense, though, right? Like, it's better to humanely kill an animal than to subject it to a life of cruelty.
And by keeping them alive, they're just going to reproduce, right?
Yeah. Station's
no
got
good.
A major vole problem.
You can't spay or neuter a vole.
Yeah.
They're too little.
Not quite sure why this would be happening in ops, but it is. And
you can't confiscate Morn's voles. They're like his pets.
Odo takes Quark off with him as Chief O'Brien.
I am Chief Miles Edward O'Brien. This is fucking spectacular.
In his civvies, hops off of the elevator.
Yeah, it's great to see Chief O'Brien. Like, always welcome in any situation.
Yeah.
Looking like he's ready to maybe hop in a runabout and go back to Bajor, maybe visit his wife.
Yeah, he's got a little swagger in his step. He gives one of those like head nods to the commander, like, Why don't you follow me into the corner? We talk about something a little bit just between you and me.
He gives him that famous Chief O'Brien head nod.
I guess he was just waiting for Odos to not be there anymore, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the move. O'Brien whips out his pistol and also a glowing beer can and tells Sisko he's coming with him.
Yeah.
And no one approaches the two because of pistol. He waves the beer can over a station in Ops. He asks the computer to transport them away on his signal, and then he does in pretty short order.
They gone. Was the outside of the spaceship that they cut to CG? And if so, is this the first time we've seen a CG spaceship on Star Trek?
I don't know.
Because there's a shot of it later of this ship that definitely isn't CG, but this shot I kind of thought might be.
Hmm.
Not sure.
I would assume that if you're sure the second one is a model, then the first one should be too, just for efficiency.
Yeah. But I wonder if it's like an experiment, like, can we sneak a CG shot in? Will people notice? Kind of a thing.
I thought it really looked like a cool ship more than anything.
Yeah. It's definitely like kind of an aerodynamic design. Like, this one's made to do some in-atmosphere maneuvering.
O'Brien attempts to do exposition on Sisko, and it fails utterly because Sisko has already guessed the situation.
I'd say that this is the same parallel universe that two of my crew members visited a year ago.
He's in the mirror universe.
That saves me having to give you a history lesson.
He's the guy who guesses the Wheel of Fortune puzzle with, like, an E in it.
Vanity of the Bonfires!
This is the first indication that we've got a little too much Star Trek in a little too small of a bag here. And it is this feeling that pervades the rest of the episode. Like, correct conclusions being jumped to repeatedly that just make you kind of scratch your head.
Yeah.
Because not only has Sisko surmised that he's in the mirror universe, in very short order, O'Brien has shared the story of Mirror Universe Sisko's death and the need for his replacement. And Sisko is on board.
Yeah, it's sort of like the movie Dave, but but if the president
it totally
was...
is. That's great.
Yeah. It's a the cover is just a picture of Sisko with like a suitcase showing up at the White House.
You know, the scene at the end where they stay up all night slashing the rebels' budget in order to afford the education bill is really heartwarming.
Yeah.
You knew they could do it if they just tried.
It's a feel-good version of politics that you wish existed, like the West Wing.
So this fucking mission involves, like the hook, the thing that really gets Sisko is the mission is to prevent a scientist from developing a sensor technology that would reveal rebel positions inside the Badlands. And the Badlands are this smoky part of the universe that obscures all the ships inside. And the rolling timpani sound of the moment occurs when the scientist is revealed to be Jennifer Sisko.
Jennifer.
The wife that Sisko lost in the first episode.
Yeah, this is pretty devastating news to one Ben Sisko, but we don't get to soak in that feeling for long because we cut almost directly to Inquisitor Kira in that post-orgy refractory period where you want to eat a bunch of cut fruit and just relax.
She's kind of luxuriating in the lap of a man.
So much of the action is happening with Kira and what she's saying.
Yeah.
But you can't help but look at this guy and his head in the frame and where he's looking and how hard he's trying not to draw attention to his own face. That feels like such a difficult challenge for a, we'll just call him a background actor, even if he's not.
Yeah, he's a bit of all right.
He's clearly made some big gains, Ben. So we see Jennifer Sisko. It's not just the reference to her that O'Brien gives Ben Sisko. I mean, she's on the scene and she's talking to Kira and giving her an update on her progress with this science project. I kind of wish she was saved for later.
Yeah.
This is one of the criticisms I have of this episode is they start with her. And I mean, I'm just going to say it. Not a strength of the episode is the Jennifer Sisko character.
I think it's not this actor's fault. I think it's that she's written to be sort of ground down by life. And so the kind of flat affect of the character is kind of hard to get out from behind.
She also has a really strange widow's peak going on.
Oh, which, do you think she might be a daywalker?
I don't think this is the actor's hairline. I think they added widow's peak. It's yeah? like widow's peak loaf.
Wow.
It is. It is, Ben, because I'm looking at her. I'm looking at her IMDb, and yeah, like she has a regular person's hairline, but yeah, in the mirror universe, she's been Adam's family.
So, anyways, she's very chilly. She's a rare human that has a job and prospects in the current political situation. And the goal here is that Sisko is going to try and talk her out of this, but she's currently working for Kira.
O'Brien has taken Sisko to the Rebel's underground lair.
Yeah.
And there he finds a Mirror Universe ROM and a Mirror Universe Tuvok.
Yeah.
And a Mirror Universe Bashir, who looks like he belongs in a Michael Landon convention. He's really got a lot of party in the back.
I didn't get why Rom had the gun out the entire time. Like, they're having their evil McLaughlin group. And he's, like, got a rifle with him yeah. the whole time. It's also just, like, really weird vibes in this rebel group, like, especially when Sisko comes in, because, you know, he and Smiley come in and kind of surprise everybody with, turns out rumors of my death were greatly exaggerated or whatever. And it's, like, real rowdy and jocular in a way where I was like, what is this, a rebellion or the bikers in that bar that Pee-wee Herman goes to?
Every scene in this episode that featured the rebels kind of gathered around really played to the back row.
Yeah, they're all just going
way.
Like, "Hur, ha, 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 ha."
All of the physicality of it is very big. The gestures are big.
Yeah.
It's very community theater acting in these scenes, you know?
Yeah. It's like a mirror universe choice, I guess.
Actors are totally invested in the idea that they too are Mirror Universe actors.
Yeah, yeah. Just be as evil as you want to be. We also get to see Mirror Dax, who has a pretty dramatically different look in this universe.
She of the tight white t-shirt clan also is clearly still a Dax.
Yeah.
She's unlike Prime Universe Dax in many ways, maybe the main ways that Sisko wants to fuck her and then unequivocally does. And does not really fight it all that much.
It's a weird thing to think about. Like,
this is like 10 minutes into the episode, Ben.
The human brain isn't built to grapple with moral choices of this magnitude, you know?
Does it count if it's Mirror Universe? That's sort of an interesting question. Like, does he have Mirror Universe Hall Pass?
The scene at the end of the episode should have been him and Dax at the replicator the next day when he's back in Prime Universe and he's just, like, fucking melting down trying to be around her and not have it be weird.
Especially because this episode is clearly meant to be fun
yeah.
and winky a little bit. That is a scene that I feel like would be so necessary. That one you just wrote on the spot. Like, give us that part.
That's the slide whistle this episode needs.
Yeah.
We cut back to Terok Nor, where Garak is reporting in. Folks will remember that he is the uniformed Cardassian second in command to Kira's first in command position. And he's in trouble because, like, the ore processing isn't going that well. He kind of calls Kira on her mood. He says that he's noticed an ill humor in her. And I was
That's
like,
pretty unprofessional.
Ill humor? That's our brand. Why is Kira on our territory?
Yeah, I thought we cornered the market, right?
but it is shown and not said that she is really missing Sisko and is still under the impression that he's dead.
It's not just the slaves on the labor side that are suffering. I mean, there are clearly problems at the top of the production here as well, right?
Yeah, it's hard for them too.
You know, so often you just can't understand the problems of an executive. You know? The real stresses.
Listen, I've got 3 mortgages to pay. I got 2 girlfriends and a wife on the side. I have expenses.
That hangar's not going to pay for itself. We do a fair bit of cross-cutting between the scene on Terok Nuar and the underground lair. The rebels are hip to the plan to save Jennifer Sisko. Like, here's the thing. Ben Sisko needs to either squirrel Jennifer Sisko off of Terok Nuar so that the science can't happen, or he's got to kill her. What needs to happen is this science not happening so that everyone who's hiding out in the Badlands remains safe.
Yeah, and I think he's just kind of overcome with a generalized sense of guilt after having sex with Dax. So he's like, I can't kill her. I just can't do it. I feel like I've already done too much.
That's the right time to ask for a favor, though, in that refractory period. Like that's when O'Brien should have popped in and laid the mission onto him, right?
Yeah.
Hey, don't mean to interrupt. Here's a bowl of cut fruit and also a mission. Yeah, and so there's a medium amount of acceptance of this mission among the clan. The pushback really comes from Bashir.
Yeah, he's definitely on team blow it up, kill them all. Yeah. And, you know, that's a pretty tenable position in this group. But they resolve the disagreement by via fisticuffs. There's a scene where Bashir is just ranting at Sisko, and O'Brien gets in Sisko's ear and is like, "Punch him! Punch him!"
This technology felt a little lowest common denominator to me because, like, O'Brien devil on the shoulders Sisko quite a bit in this ep, and I kind of had hoped that stuff like this would be done with more of a glance.
Yeah, like remember to be evil can be implied and not actually said out loud.
Especially because, like, they're all in the same room. And O'Brien does not use a kind of sotto voce whisper to Sisko. He basically tells him to punch him and he does.
Yeah, Bashir knows he said something to him if he doesn't know what he said, but everybody else would have heard what O'Brien said.
Yeah, a little bit of a problem.
Hey, Bashir, after now that they're gone, get a load of this. When you were yelling at Sisko, O'Brien told him, punch him. That's what you would normally do.
O'Brien's like, that's not what I told him. I was like, all right, sir, we let him go.
And then I danced to tequila, and we were all pretty good friends after that.
Ben, one thing that's also a problem is that Rom is working both sides.
Yeah, Rom is a double agent. There's a pretty amazing sight gag in this episode that actually got an out loud laugh from me, which is he's giving the information dump to Kira while she's topless, laying belly down on a table, receiving a massage. And the massage hands are like in soft focus in the foreground when Rom says,
but I could tell you how to get your hands on them.
And there's literally hands playing over her back.
That's fun.
It's very weird.
That's just great.
Yeah, but Rom is going to betray Sisko to Kira. I thought that the episode did a pretty good job of, like, planting this concern, but then throwing us off the scent a little bit, because when Sisko arrives, he's suddenly acting like getting taken prisoner was his idea the entire time, and, you know, throwing his weight around, like, very, very self-assured. And I sort of imagined that what Rom gave them was his position in space. So when the like Klingon battle cruiser decloaks,
right,
that was it. And then Sisko was kind of overcoming it, but that shoe has not dropped yet. And I thought that was like some good writing.
Yeah, that's a good call. I mean, O'Brien they're in transit to Terok Nor, and O'Brien tells Sisko on their way there, like, not to get his hopes up about what Jennifer Sisko may be like in this universe. And that's at the point when they get pulled over by a couple of Alliance cruisers.
You know, Captain Sisko would try to fight his way out of this.
So they help them get to Terok Nor. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, Sisko walks off the transport and just lays one on Kira, which is another one of those things that is just weird and incongruous to see.
It's got to be, like, you work with someone for 3 seasons before there's ever even a whiff of this kind of relationship. I think you probably get used to your professional interaction being a certain way.
Yeah, and there must be instincts that you develop in how your character relates to the other character that have to be overcome in a scene like this. I would imagine that there is a high degree of difficulty in this.
One thing the character of Ben Sisko overcomes is any sort of reluctance to fuck Kira. So he's now 2 for 2, like, kind of a great day for Ben Sisko. He's going for the hat trick.
Did he, you think he took a shower in between? It's the polite thing to do, but is it the Mirror Universe thing to do?
It is not. Yeah, he's stink dogging it.
Yeah, he gets sent off to the boudoir. Smiley is not so lucky. He gets sent down to ore processing.
A lot less sex in ore processing, I bet.
Yeah. It's just as sweaty, but not as sexy.
It's more of a masturbatorium, really.
But Sisko does get to meet Jennifer. Garak brings her in, and it's a touching reunion, Adam.
Yeah, because what you want to do if you're the Alliance is stick maybe your most valuable asset in a room alone with someone whose
allegiances are uncertain.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what the hell? Are people in the Mirror Universe also dumber than Prime Universe? I kind of think so. Because there's no way Prime Universe Garak would allow this to happen.
I mean, if we were following the logic that if you're smart in the Prime Universe, you're dumb in the Mirror Universe, then the Packleds would be in charge because the bit would have flipped on them.
That would have been so fucking great.
We look for people to be our slaves. What if the Packleds in the Mirror Universe are like the Borgs? Or like they're this just...
They're gatherers, but of a very effective emotional way. That'd be fun.
And they're just a force of nature, you know?
Yeah.
What are you doing now?
Exactly.
Ben, the scene with Jennifer Sisko and Prime Universe Sisko is an example of what you referred to earlier, which is, I do not believe this is Felicia Bell's fault as an actor, but boy, her lift is incredibly difficult dialogue-wise, and it's this scene that is really the centerpiece of that for me. We know that Avery Brooks is capable of elevating actors he acts with, too, and I think it is very telling that he is unable to do that in this scene with her.
I think the challenge here is that they are meant to not know each other.
Yeah.
And he's arguing with her, and she keeps calling him on, like, the premises of the arguments he's making. And that's because, like, he doesn't know what his previously stated positions are because he's not the person he's claiming to be.
He doesn't have O'Brien on his shoulder telling him to punch her.
Right. I actually think the scene kind of works if you think about it that way. They're working at cross purposes and feel like they should know each other, but don't actually.
Hmm. To me, the thing that clanged in the scene wasn't that their relationship was incompatible based on the dialogue they were delivering. To me, I mean, this scene suffers for its terrible dialogue. I think that's what happened here.
Okay. Well, that's just like your opinion, man.
She doesn't believe Sisko's bullshit, and he says that he's changed. It's that kind of melodrama too, right? Like, there are issues bigger than them happening, and they use this time to talk about them.
Yeah.
There's not enough time.
You have no right to talk to me like that.
She pushes back. She's like, she doesn't have her own agency. Like, her comforts come from the alliance that she works for, even though she has mixed feelings about that. And Sisko makes the case that she'd have agency over her own life if she just joined the rebellion.
They're your own people, Jennifer.
He makes the case that she's maybe more physically comfortable, but perhaps worse off than the people that actually know that they're slaves. Like, she's talked herself into the idea that she has agency when she really has none. And I thought that that was a pretty intense point of the argument.
She's like, look, man, when you're an executive, you got to make all these decisions at a really high level. Like, you got these people's lives in your hands. You don't understand the pressure that I'm under.
If I don't have a $100,000 car, people won't understand that I'm successful. And so I have to bear that expense.
They have to pay me $60 million a year. Otherwise, I'm just going to leave the company. It's worth it.
This scene is super long. It kind of felt like maybe they had two scenes and like there was supposed to be some time in between them, because he says, like, think about it in a way that sort of seems like they're going to table it for now. But like 2 minutes later, he's like kicking through the door and like dual wielding Klingon disruptors and stuff.
I do like the John Woo escape scene that kicks off here. That's fun.
There's a temptation to dual wielding, but you can't rub gun oil on. You can't do gun maintenance when you're dual wielding.
Yeah.
So that's got its downsides.
Sisko leaves the room and finds a horse. Tries not to spook it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Klingon.
It's a good patak.
So, Sisko is tapped on the subdermal communicator.
It stimulates the part of the brain that releases natural endorphins.
And gets in touch with O'Brien, who then hotwires a hatch inside the ore processing center.
Yeah.
To get a door open. And so the escape is on.
Yeah, and he, O'Brien gets a bunch of the other Terran slaves in ore processing to come with him, and they kind of meet up mid escape with Sisko and Jennifer, who are you know, kind of in the back hallways, like coming around corners, and there's like Cardassians and Klingons that pop out and shoot at them.
It's a very Star Warsian fight, isn't it? Anytime you're shooting down a hallway.
Yeah, it really.
That's Star Wars.
Yeah, there's a lot about this episode that feels Star Wars. I feel like some of the sets that they built felt more Star Wars-y than normal.
Yeah.
They're headed for an airlock, I guess the ship that they are planning on leaving on. And when they get there, they find MU Rom. And he's been impaled against the door of the airlock.
Stick around.
He was hung there like a Prime Universe dartboard. I was hoping they would find his body with the head crushed under the gear to the ship, like the docking.
Oh, that would have been fun. Yeah.
That would have been great. A little too gory.
That would have been real gnarly.
Yeah.
How hard does it seem like it would be to stab something into the material on that door, though?
Very difficult, I bet.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
He should be more fucked up given the physics of a sword or whatever that is going into that door.
He should be event horizon flayed open by the force it would take to do that. You're right.
Yeah.
Ben, one thing a hallway laser beam fight affords you is the opportunity to monologue.
Yeah.
That is an opportunity that Kira takes.
That was very clever, Benjamin.
Yeah, she's got her United Colors of Benetton of Cardassians, Klingons, and Bajorans.
She's got Terrans, too, doesn't she? As part of that security team? It kind of looks that way.
Uncle Terrans?
Ding! Wonderful.
Yeah, and the math here is basically like, what if we give Jennifer up and Jennifer just makes a point of not finishing her research? Like, we could do that. I thought that seemed like a pretty reasonable strategy to pursue.
I thought so, too. I was on that team.
But that is not what they do. And they kind of disappear down the hallway. There's a pretty funny moment where, you know, on the count of three, come out with your hands up, and and there's just kind of like smoke dissipating down at the end of the hallway. And my favorite line of the episode comes from Garrick when he orders his troops to move out.
Pursue!
That was so unintentionally funny. That was great. It sounded like something out of the first Warcraft. like when you ordered someone to chop down wood, it would say like zug zug or something. Right.
So they head back to ore processing, which has an airlock for some reason. I wasn't really clear on why that would be, but they say it's like the only way in or out, and they kind of just barely get the doors closed before the baddies show up. And it turns out to just have been a stalling tactic, and Sisko uses the intervening time to set self-destruct on the station computer because the password on Tarek Nor in the Mirror Universe just so happens to be the same as the password on DS9 in the Prime Universe.
It's amazing. I've got the same combination on my luggage.
Mm. So he gets root access, turns on self-destruct, changes the root password. And when Kira and her bad guys come in, you know, he's got her dead to rights. He's got the thermal detonator in Jabba's palace.
Would you say that Prime Sisko is Elite Haxor here, or was the password too easy, and he doesn't get that kind of credit?
it's like in the movie Hackers. Her password was God. Because she thought she was like the awesomest sysadmin out there.
In the Mirror Universe, the way that Mirror Sisko got his job was exactly like Hugh Jackman got his in the movie Swordfish. He had to hack into Tarek Nor while getting a blowjob.
Come on, Stan.
You know, because Mirror Universe is sexy.
Yeah.
Kira looks deeply into Sisko's eyes and can tell he's not bluffing. And so they do that trade. Sisko's like, you got to let us out of here, and then I'll give you the codes. And then Kira counteroffers with, give us the codes first, and then we'll let you go. And then Sisko's like, what kind of idiot do you take me for? I'm not a Mirror Universe Sisko here. Like, I'm actually smart.
I'm not going to give up all my leverage in this negotiation. I mean, I'm not stupid enough to have a casino go out of business.
Also, make sure there's some cut fruit on the ship we leave on.
Quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A bucket.
A pail.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back to my living state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
So they get to go. I really liked the way Sisko kind of milked this moment. Like, he wasn't just like sprinting out of there the second they had a deal. He really kind of like takes his time, kind of like, all right, we're leaving. Here we go.
Back on the Rebel planet, Jennifer is safe and sound, or as safe and sound as anyone can be on a Rebel planet inside the Badlands.
On this crazy, crazy planet.
But she knows that Sisko isn't her husband, and this has been an imposter all along, because he's too nice.
Yeah. There was that moment where she kind of noticed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was in the scene where he's in the standoff with Kira. You see Jennifer realize that he's not who he says he is.
Yeah.
And she's like, admit it, you know, admit who you are, or tell me who you are, really. And I thought that was a pretty interesting moment, because like the potential number of things he could be in this world is, you know, it's a pretty long list. You know, he could be a shapeshifter, or, you know, he could be anything.
Sisko walks right up to the opportunity to hat trick the day. Like, you know he's got to be thinking about it, right? Like, this is the moment. He doesn't have to go back right now. O'Brien has the technology to wait 40 minutes.
Yeah.
But no, Sisko's like, take me home. I'm too tired.
These pipes are clean!
That's it for him. He's done. He's going to go sleep for a couple of days.
As tantalizing the idea may be to have one last go with my wife.
That's the button. But boy, there are a number of buttons that would have been better here. One being the one you dropped earlier on in the ep, and another one being like a real moment of pause where he could, like, we're being silly and gross with the idea, but like, God, if your wife was dead and you had a chance to make love with her one last time, like,
yeah,
wouldn't you at least think about it? He doesn't even think about it, and that's a problem, I think.
Yeah, it's sad. It's sad that there isn't any romance element in their relationship in this.
Yeah.
Or if not a romance element, like the element of them like both feeling it really strongly, but also knowing that it's not the same person and therefore like resisting it.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't stop Sisko twice earlier that day that it wasn't the same person that he knew.
Yeah.
And if anything, that was an attraction.
Yeah.
Did you like the episode though, Ben?
I did. I think that you maybe had more problems with it than I did. I have a stated bias against the Mirror Universe, but I feel like this was as well done as a Mirror Universe episode has been typically. So, no complaints here. I thought it was like a pretty good, like B+ episode.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. Ben, hard disagree for me. In addition to like the issues that I had with some dialogue in parts, this felt to me like a video game played on the level between easy and medium. Like, one thing I think Discovery does really well is they make the Mirror Universe difficult, really difficult. Like, Mirror Universe on Discovery is all Madden, and this is preseason Star Trek. And to me, I think one easy way to make this scene more difficult is to, instead of having O'Brien puppet mastering Sisko the way he is, like, why not give O'Brien an angle of his own? What we needed, I think, was another double cross here, and I think O'Brien would have been a great guy to serve that double cross. And because he's so safe at all times,
yeah,
I felt safe as a viewer, and I think that danger was really lacking here. I think the danger is what makes Mirror Universe fun, and that is why I didn't have a ton of fun watching this episode.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Adam.
Yeah, Kira in a cat suit, though, bumps it up to a solid B+.
You know, it is a ton of fun, aside from cat suits.
What's that?
It's priority one messages.
P1 in a cat suit. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Yeah,
it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first priority one message is of a commercial nature. The message has been requested to be read in the voice of Kevin. So here we go. Kevin, pitchman for the following. Fringe of DeShoto, I implore you to take a journey into the weird and wacky world of Shattered Worlds RPG, an actual play podcast that smashes elements of Star Trek, Star Wars, Thundar the Barbarian, and other crap people in your generation find enjoyable. Oh, Ben, there's a Vichy French guy thing here, too. You want to take that part?
Okay.
Space and dick jokes! What's not to love?
Find Shattered Worlds on your podcatcher of choice.
Cool.
Shattered Worlds.
Wow.
Pitchman, Kevin Uxbridge. How about that? Problematic, I would say.
Adam, we have a second priority one message here. It's from the Yosemite Dragons, and it is for Nicole Bernard, Alpha 7-2. And it goes, I like this. Trainee Bernard, good work returning the sacred rocks of evidence to Anybody Canyon. And thank you for the signed poster of Ben and Adam. It will assume a place of honor near the signed Jay Frakes in the Dragon Den.
Wow.
May your Ferengi lightning whip always shoot true. May you always be a 4-ish on a 1-7 scale, and come visit the Dragon sometime. I'm just I'm taking a wild stab at how Dragons is pronounced, because it's got a Y in it, so I hope I'm at least in the ballpark.
I think if there's one thing we know after 200 and episodes of Greatest Gen, it's that your pronunciation is often more correct than mine. So I'm going to go with your instinct there.
Okay.
I do miss that Ferengi whip it over your head and shoot it style weapon, though. That
yeah,
was fun.
I want an episode where Nog finds quirks, like in an old shipping container or something. And it's like, oh, can I have it, Uncle? And Quark is like, no, you're not old enough.
He becomes the Ferengi Jedi. It chooses him.
Yeah. And then they have like a scene where they're doing like target practice in a cargo bay. And Nog is like whip cracking bean cans off a fence.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah. That'll be my spec script for Deep Space Nine. We'll see if they produce it.
Oh, the things they left behind, Ben.
Do you think when a Ferengi enters Starfleet, as is Nog's stated intent, he gets issued a whip? Do you get to use your like traditional weapon the way Worf does?
Is the Ferengi weapon called a Nene? Of course it can't be. It's got to be called his whip.
Yeah, it's his whip. The Nene is the slightly smaller one.
Do you think the first time a Ferengi uses a Dustbuster-style phaser, they do, like, they draw the lasso around their heads with it before shooting it?
Well, just, like, branches from trees fall around them. No. Nog, hold on. Let me show you how to use it first.
You got to make sure that thing is aimed downrange.
You know, we want to be downrange of your money, and if you have some money... to hit us with, you go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and get a priority one message on The Greatest Generation. It's a couple $100 for a commercial message and merely $100 for a personal message. And it's a great way to support this show and take some tree branches down while you're at it. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
This one was fairly obvious to me. It's 2 out of 3 for Sisko. Like, like he's a sex tourist here.
Yeah.
And with the ease with which he's able to operate in the mirror universe, like, he takes to it like a fish to water. Like, he is in. He is not only in, but, like, acting the part immediately.
Yeah.
He is Shimoda to me. Like, no hesitation sexually in his moments with Dax and Kira. I feel like this is a clear differentiation from Picard. Picard would be all up in his own head. He would resist, find a way not to make this happen. But Sisko's in deep cover. Sisko's down. Sisko's going.
Yeah, Sisko does the rail of cocaine to prove that he's not a cop.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, had there been any rebel drugs out on the table, you
no
know
hesitation.
You know he's getting into that. What about you, Ben?
Well, we have a daily double here, Adam. It is Sisko for me as well. The reason I wrote him down was the other laugh out loud moment in the episode, which was he's taken Smiley's gun in the ship when they first arrive at the mirror universe, and Smiley is like, you gotta track down this scientist, you know, the dead mirror universe Sisko believed that he could change her mind about who to be helping here. And Sisko goes like, who was it? And O'Brien hands him a photograph and he looks at it for a solid 5 seconds before going, Jennifer. Like he doesn't recognize her at first.
It's the widow's peak, right?
Yeah, he's like, that doesn't look like her. Wait, it is. It is her.
He like uses his hand to cover up her hairline. No, I can see the resemblance.
So it's like a sister.
That was silly.
Yeah. But for that reason, he is my drunk Shimoda.
Gotta get that cold press action.
Ben, what do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is Season 3, Episode 20, Improbable Cause, Part 1. Garak's shop mysteriously explodes, launching Odo on an investigation to determine who is trying to kill the Cardassian exile and why.
when you said the word explodes and then launching afterwards, I was like, wait, Odo is thrown free from the station in the explosion? Does that, you know what, he'd probably survive in free space, right?
Yeah. Is Odo vacuum proof?
I bet he is.
Or would he turn into a fine mist? But we've already seen Odo die once, and he turned into Gak.
Mm.
Well, Adam, why don't you head over to gach.biz/game and roll them bones and tell us how we'll be doing this episode.
Was there another intro you wanted to read?
I'm kind of bored of that bit.
Okay.
I don't feel like we have anything to say other than one is good and one is bad, and it's always the same, so.
All right.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Ben, our runabout is on square 45, where just one square ahead there is the Traveler spot, and then a couple of squares after that there's a wormhole.
Fun.
So I'm going to roll the die.
Roll them.
So I rolled a 1.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
Which means I landed on the Traveler.
Whoa, shit.
Which means I move forward 5 spaces, which also means I'm on square 51 now.
Wow.
But square 51 is a normal episode.
Yeah. But
so
we
move
forward quite a bit.
Yeah, that really frisbeed us across the board.
Yeah, that's crazy. I've been wondering if the program that runs our board game at gach.biz/game was actually smart enough to like do the actions of the ones that move you. That's cool. That's the first time we've seen it in action.
Yeah. It happened. It's
all
done.
All right. Well, we have a quirks bar and a looking at each other during in striking distance now. That could be complicated, Adam.
I'm excited for that opportunity. Maybe we could do both. Why not both?
Yeah. Well, we will be watching that part one episode next week. In the meantime, we got a whole bunch of people to thank. First and foremost, we got to thank all the people that go to MaximumFun.org/donate and support the show. Hey, if you listen to this like contemporaneous with the release, how about this for a New Year's resolution? Support the Greatest Generation on MaximumFun.org/donate.
Yeah, it means a ton to be able to afford to go out on tour the way we do or perform a square like looking at each other during.
Yeah.
And also
that's airfare, you know.
Yeah. And also quite literally to make the show possible.
Yeah. So we really appreciate it. If you'd like to support the show in other ways, you can tell a friend or recommend it to somebody. You can go on Apple Podcasts and leave a nice review.
If you have a year-end list, today's the last day to assemble a year-end list on which we might be a part of. So why don't you add us to that list? Get the word out that way.
I think we're not going to be on any year-end lists.
I don't think so either. I think this is 2 straight years of being shut out.
Yeah, just totally shut out. But maybe we're considered to be too marginal to be on one of those lists. But if you're working editorial at some major publication that does a podcast roundup list at the end of the year, start planting the seeds now with whoever runs that piece of content. Put them onto the Greatest Generation.
Gotta thank our best friends of DeSoto, people like Adam Ragusea, who have taken the original music by Dark Materia and turned that into a audio pastiche sprinkled on every episode that we do, including our live shows. Adam Ragusea is a great friend of the show and does great work.
If you'd like to discuss the show, there are lots of online communities at various social networks, ranging in level of garbageness from fairly garbage to extremely garbage. The networks themselves, not the communities. The communities are great. But, you know, lots of misgivings about social networks these days. Use the hashtag GreatestGen on Twitter. Check out the trading cards that Bill Tilly makes every week. Those are one of my favorite things. Also, J.J. Lendl has been making awesome posters for the episodes of Deep Space Nine that we review. I keep seeing people asking him where they can buy them, and him, you know, very kindly replying to each one, saying, like, I don't actually have permission to print and sell these. I'm just making them for fun.
Right. But,
which is the same is true of what Bill Tilly is doing. But we really appreciate them both.
Yeah, an episode isn't complete for me until the poster and the cards are up. So a great, great part of the show. With that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, where one of us will be thrown free from the show.
Tune in to find out who.
You gotta buckle up while we're recording, Ben.
Yeah, I should be using more safety precautions.
Boy, Ben, my brain was just stuck at the bottom of a well, and you really saved me on that. Thanks, buddy.
No, no problem.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.